Hey, you're listening to Cut for Time, a podcast from Faith Church located on the north side of Indianapolis. My name is Claire Kingsley. Each week, I'll sit down with one of our preaching pastors to discuss their Sunday sermon. Cut for Time is a look behind the scenes of sermon preparation, and they'll share with us a few things that we didn't hear from the sermon on Sunday. Thanks for listening.
Recording in progress.
Well, Joey, give us a recap from your sermon on Sunday. Our missionary journeys are beginning, and so
yes,
the first of many that we'll cover. Why don't you give us just a quick overview before we cover some questions?
Yeah. So very first story, it's just a few verses long. Luke is really moving us quickly from the action of, okay, these guys are in Antioch, and then boom, they're in the port city Seleucus, and then they sail over to the island of Cyprus. They started out on the east side. They work their way along the main road along the south side. They end up in capital city Paphos, and there's this interaction with a Roman government official over the whole island who is curious about their message, also probably looking out for, like, you guys are creating a little bit of a stir here on the islands. Like, nobody wants outsiders coming in and then stirring things up. So he invites Paul and Barnabas, or Saul and Barnabas, in to tell him more. And they come in, they're opposed by a guy we're told is a Jewish false prophet magician named Bar-Jesus, which means son of Jesus, or, you know, like Jesus. Now, that's not referring to Jesus the Messiah. That's referring to the guy's own dad, because Jesus is a pretty common name. Yeah. It's the Latin version of Joshua, so it's a pretty common name. But he also goes by another name, a Roman name that means magician, you know, one who sees the future. And he is really opposed to what Saul and Barnabas are preaching. Now, we don't know yet what they're preaching. Luke gets us right into this conflict. Next week, we get to see a long sermon. Like, this is pretty typical of what Saul or Paul preached in the synagogues in the Roman world that they would visit. But this week, we're just looking at this conflict between this guy opposing the message of the gospel and Paul and Barnabas trying to explain it to the Roman governor. And we don't get a blow by blow of what's happening, but the way Luke tells the story, we get the sense that Paul and Barnabas are giving the presentation. This guy, Elymas or Bar-Jesus, is refuting them or trying to refute them every point along the way. And finally, Paul just gets so frustrated that, filled with the Spirit, he just says to this guy, look, the hand of the Lord is on you, and you're going to be blind for a time and wander around. And he's just immediately struck with mist and darkness, the passage says. And the proconsul, the Roman governor there, sees the power of the teaching. He's astonished at the teaching, not astonished at the miracle, but astonished at what they're teaching, and believes, or begins to believe, in Jesus as the Messiah. The really interesting thing is, and I'll move past the summary here, even talking with a couple of people, Pastor Tom and others afterwards, it's like a really important lens or filter for understanding Acts is asking ourselves the question every story, okay, of all the stories, why include this one? So why this story at this point in this order? Like, why didn't Luke start with, here's what Saul preached in the synagogues? Why start with this conflict, and why include it? And especially if we read the story and we're like, oh yeah, that's cool. That's, you know, Paul versus a magician. That's interesting. But you're kind of like, okay, so it's another example of power. Luke doesn't have infinite space. He's telling a theological history of the church. So we have to really think deeply about, why is this story here? And what does the fact that the story is included intend to communicate, first of all, to Theophilus, right? The guy who's commissioning the writing of this book, wanting to know how the church started and how it became a Gentile church, or how it became a church that included Gentiles. And then through that, okay, what does it say about the nature of the church as a whole, and what does it communicate to us? So asking that question is a huge clue to how to interpret why the story's there and what the story's trying to communicate.
All right, so you're going to answer that for us? We've asked you.
Okay. All right. I've asked my own question. Yeah. Well, part of it comes down to, like, that word magician. I joked on stage, like, when we think of a magician, we think of somebody with sleight of hand or death defying, like a Harry Houdini or a David Copperfield or a David Blaine or something like that. And somebody who's going to pull out a deck of cards and do some sleight of hand trick. But To them, a magician at the time was a lot like a priest, somebody who had access to power, to transcendent power that is not open and available to the ordinary person. And so, magician is one way to translate the word, astrologer, diviner, things like that. So, a magician in the ancient world was someone who could communicate with the dead, who could understand how the movements of the stars and the planets affect life here on Earth, who was able to control and manipulate and direct evil forces against other people or protect the people in their orbit against evil forces, right? One of I brought out a quote from a historian because it's fascinating how historians of the early church, especially like trying to understand how evangelism in the early church worked, just uniformly agree that the most appealing part of Christianity for the average person in the street, like just the average Greek or Roman citizen, the most appealing part of Christianity was that it offered deliverance or rescue from the fear of being at the mercy of fate, at the whims of fortune, and under the influence of evil that you couldn't control. Yes, forgiveness of sins, but it wasn't the main issue wasn't so much, or the main sort of felt issue wasn't so much like, oh wow, I've affronted a God with my sin and I need forgiveness. It was, I have no control over my life. I have no control over what happens to me. I don't have the money and the resources to even pretend I have control. Who will rescue me from everything that's arrayed against me? And so the ancient ideas of fate just sort of weaving men's lives together and snipping their threads whenever they felt like it, the idea of fortune, being at the whim of just, oh yeah, this person's on the up, this person's on the down. The idea of there are evil forces in the world that someone else may be trying to use against me. It's like, who's going to deliver me from all of that? And along comes Saul and Barnabas, and others who are preaching like Jesus is the one who created everything and controls everything and is over all the principalities and powers. And you know what we know about Jesus? He's not like Zeus, capricious, and he's not like Thor, angry, and he's not like Fortuna, just whimsical. He's not like any of these other gods. He's self-sacrificing, self-giving, and out of love. So my kind of big idea for the sermon was that the power at the center of power, which is a real big Greek question, what's at the center of power? The power at the center of power isn't power, it's love. We are not at the whim of fate or fortune or evil powers we can't control because God, because Jesus is the one who created everything and is over all of that. We serve the God who is above everything. And one thing I didn't really bring out in the sermon is that even in the Greco-Roman world, there was a debate about, is Zeus more powerful than fate and fortune, or is Zeus himself subject to fate? And fortune is like, there's this question of who has more power, who's the final authority. And because, man, we follow the God who created everything and gave himself for us out of love, that is a radically different way of thinking about how the world works, who's in charge, and what the power at the center of power is really like.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, well, can I just ask a question, like a logistical question, Joey, since we're like venturing out to studying these missionary journeys. At the start of the series, we talked a little bit about maps. Do we include the maps? We show them. And I feel like we decided to not. And so like, but this would be the time where maybe people would be expecting us to like show the routes and show from one. So like, why, how did we make that decision? And why is that not what we are, like, why is that not our focus?
It's a really good question. And I think if we were in a class, more of a lecture style, we would certainly put a map up on the screen. Now the difficult part of it is you put a map up on the screen. I bet you've seen 100 maps and you still couldn't draw it out.
Yeah, for
You
sure.
still couldn't draw out Paul's first missionary journey. So they actually don't communicate anything other than a rough shape in a outline of the world that we don't understand. We don't intuitively, sort of know our way around. Like if all of this had happened in the US, and we said like, yeah, so they landed in on Ellis Island, they landed in New York, they made their way down to Atlanta, across through Dallas and over to LA. I wouldn't need to draw a map, right, for you to understand that. And if I were preaching in Europe and I showed that map, there may be a number of people who are like, okay, I mean, I know like that shape, but I still don't have like an intuitive sense of what would that be like to travel from New York to Atlanta. Like you and I may intuitively just kind of go like, yeah, that feels like a 12-hour drive, right? Because we have the lived experience in the geography that helps us to sort of locate ourselves within that story. So instead of putting up a map and assuming that that's communicating what we want to communicate, instead, we're trying to tell the stories of we're trying to tell the story in a way that you get the sense of each location of what happened. So I didn't give it quite so much detail this last time, but I said, hey, Saul and Barnabas, they set out from Antioch and they walk the 7 hours southwest to the port city of Seleucus, where which is a bustling town where they can get a ship to anywhere, and they get on board and sail the 60 miles south southwest to Salamis, the old capital city of the island of Cyprus, and they land there. And trying to describe the journey and give more of a word picture of what the journey's like than a map of exactly where they went. Because even saying, Antioch, well, that's pretty much Antakya in Turkey right now. I can think of three people in the congregation who would just know where that is and intuit what that means. So again, I don't think maps really communicate as much as we would hope that they do. So I'd rather tell the story of what it felt like than show a picture of a line of where they went. Unless I could do it Indiana Jones style, where the flight line and then the. Do you know what I'm talking about from the old Indiana Jones movies?
I
Okay, all
do
right,
know.
all right.
Yeah, I can picture that.
Yeah.
Okay. No, that's good.
So that's why I don't show maps.
So Joey, for us, you've asked us to consider what authority has our hope, or what authority, like where's our fear? Do we have fear because maybe we have not set God over the power of all these things? Are there any traps that we should be aware of that we might fall into in a way of like believing in it all works out, or like I don't know, like things that are well-meaning or well-intended, or we're like, oh, that's like I don't know, just things that we should be aware of where you would challenge us to be like, no, God's over that. Like, do you see God in that space over that thing? Because our vision of it is too small, or we're too narrow-minded, even.
That's a really good question. So I have a couple of thoughts, and one, a lot of it comes down to the story we tell about how the world works, the way we tell stories. When we say something like everything happens for a reason, right? It reminds me of that book, Everything Happens for a Reason and Other Lies that I've loved. That someone says, when we say everything happens for a reason, we are basically saying God is fate. He's just kinder than the Greek idea of fate, but we're basically saying, God is a more relational version of the Greek idea of fate. Or if when we say, I don't know, the Lord helps those who help themselves, we're saying, well, he's just a slightly more intentional version of fortune. Or when we believe things like, boy, if I only prayed more or had more faith or worked harder or trusted more, then XYZ bad thing wouldn't have happened. We're saying, well, God is, manipulatable like forces of evil and forces of good if we just have the right spell or behavior or incantation or whatever. So a lot of it comes down to the story we tell about the world and the way the world works. But then we also have to think about, okay, yes, do I believe in three sisters at the roots of the tree of the world that are weaving the threads of human life together so that each of us is forced to do what's been decreed for us ahead of time? No. And yet, in the first century, Jesus was preached as being over the fates, over fate, as having control over it. So in our world today, we don't talk about three sisters forcing us to do what we want. And we don't talk about the, you know, fortune spinning her wheel and making good things happen to some people and bad things to others. And yet we talk about, I mentioned this in the sermon, we talk about some forces in the world as if they were at that level of fate or fortune. We talk about, you know, the economy. You can't resist it. It just is what it is. And for the, with, if you have enough money, you can pay the right people to tell you what the economy is going to do, just like what fate is going to do, so that you can at least align yourself on the side of where it's going that's going to give you the most advantage. And so instead of thinking about the world in terms of, okay, yeah, there's an economy and it has power that we've invested in it, and yet God is over that, instead we kind of rely on, well, who's going to help me understand this power so I can utilize it for myself? Or I joked about AI, right? AI is a, everybody's talking about it as if it's this huge evil force that's going to destroy jobs, which is the same conversation that's been had about any new technology or many new technologies for millennia. But there are people already out there. I see ads from tech companies capitalizing on the fear by saying, hey, AI is going to cause problems, but if you pay us, we can help you utilize it and, you know, help you make sure that it works for you. So when we think about, okay, so here's a God who created everything. Great. Like, I believe that, and he's love. But over here are all of these other forces and powers and pressures that I need to learn how to manipulate or maneuver around or understand. And that is, you know, the whole side of the world that I got to figure out using ingenuity and money and all that. And then over here is the sort of spiritual side where God just takes care of me. And no matter what happens, at least when I die, I go to heaven. That's not a very integrated story of how the world works. So mainly, like, yeah, is there like specific, what should you do today, tomorrow application for us? Probably not in terms of stop trusting magicians.
Right.
But there definitely is in terms of, okay, how do you think about the way the world works? What story are you telling? Where do you think God actually has control and where he doesn't? Where are you trying to manipulate the forces of the world in your favor? Or where are you giving into fear that forces are being arrayed against you, especially in a political season when lots of politicians are going to be happy to say, there's a power in Washington that is arrayed against you, and that's why you need to vote for me so that I can be initiated in and use, you know, use the secret power you don't have access to, but use it for your benefit.
No.
Right? When we think just getting the right one into the center of power is going to solve problems. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really comes down to, how do we view and think about the world? And do we see that, like Paul writes in Colossians, that Jesus triumphed over authorities and powers, you know, the fates, the fortunes, the evil powers. He made a mockery of them by submitting them to public ridicule in the cross. Do we really believe and live and tell the story as if, yeah, okay, there's powers of economy, there's powers of technology, there's powers of social engineering, but those powers, like, Jesus basically, you know, pantsed them on the cross. They've got nothing. I'm not sure if I can use that analogy, but like, he ridiculed them, and we don't have to live in fear of stuff that we don't understand and can't control, because Jesus is over it all.
Yeah.
So
thank you. All right, Joey, that's good.
All right, we're gonna leave it on that poorly chosen analogy.
Perfect.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Cut for Time. If you wish to submit questions to our pastors following their sermon, you can email them to podcast@faithliveitout.org or text them into our Faith Church texting number, and we'll do our best to cover it in the week's episode. If this conversation blessed you in any way, we encourage you to share it with others. Thanks for listening. We'll be back again next week.